Whenever feasible, one should always try to eat the root. Would you join me at the table?
Hello and welcome to Eat the Rootcast, a podcast about NBC's Hannibal and the works of Thomas Harris. I'm Cooper, and with me I have...
Hi, it's Miko.
And this is Ophelia.
And tonight we are talking about Season 3, Episode 6, Dulce. Written by, Miko, and you'll like this, Don Mancini. And does that name ring a bell for you? The Don Mancini who created Chucky. Yeah.
I didn't even make that connection.
Writer, director, creator of Child's Play.
Wow. That is awesome.
And then, of course, in episode tradition, it's been rewritten by Steve Lightfoot and Brian Fuller. And our returning director, Vincenzo Natali.
Who directed the first three episodes of the season.
Yeah. So a bunch of stuff happened between last episode and this episode. The day our last episode went up, Amazon and Netflix announced they both were uninterested in continuing Hannibal.
Yeah.
Netflix, because
sad. Yeah.
Because Amazon has seasons 1, 2, and 3 exclusive streaming, and Netflix didn't want to jump on board for a fourth season where they wouldn't be able to stream the first three. And Amazon passed because they wanted to get started with season 4 immediately. And Brian Fuller wants all the scripts written for season 4 before he gets started. And he's got a little thing going on called American Gods.
Yes.
And when there was talk of Hannibal not being picked up again, I was thinking, you know, this American Gods thing, this is going to fuck things up.
Yeah.
And you're right.
Going to be the time constraint of having the other show.
It's going to be Joss Whedon leaving Buffy to work on Firefly all over again.
Oh, sad.
You know, which produced Firefly, which is awesome, but Buffy just went to shit. Marty Noxon was not the showrunner for that show. Anyway.
So you couldn't, but, yeah, they weren't able to really sustain the feel.
Now, Brian Fuller has said, and he said at Comic-Con, that he is looking at other methods of doing this. So he is looking at movie. He is looking at coming back in a couple years and doing another season of it. And, you know, that's definitely a possibility because, as we've seen, nothing is really dead anymore. We saw the trailer for the new Heroes.
Yes.
And, you know, Twin Peaks, X-Files. Coach is coming back.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, what? Who saw that one coming?
Not me.
Full House is getting a sequel series.
What?
Oh, yeah. Although Uncle Jesse's got to get his act together because he's in rehab at the moment.
Yeah. Man, everything old is new again.
So, yeah, I'm sticking with my, we should be really thrilled that we got three seasons of this show in the first place, especially three seasons of this show on NBC.
Yes.
And Brian Fuller has been very careful about that. You know, everybody's boo NBC, how dare you? And he's pointing out that, oh my God, we are the luckiest people in the world to have gotten what we already got.
Yeah. The show could have been axed in three episodes, not three seasons.
Yeah. Especially standard television method where, you know, it's just like, it's not performing. You know what? Let's put some reruns in there.
Yeah.
The fact that we are getting all of season three, the fact that we got any of this at all, I think we should feel very lucky.
Mm-hmm.
And that we're getting Red Dragon very soon.
This is going to go out with a bang. Yeah.
Now, there is... There's a trailer for the Red Dragon half of the season.
It's not a whole episode that tells you things you didn't want to know when you watch it, like the other trailer you watched.
Well, at least I'm up to the point that wacky rogue trailer revealed. I mean, the big reveal of that trailer was Hannibal sawing into Will's head.
Really?
Yeah, I can't believe they would use that in a trailer. And I mean, it's definitely possible that that's why that trailer never made it to general audiences, because NBC realized maybe it's not the greatest idea to reveal all this in the trailer. But it showed Potsy's death. It showed Will's Paul Krendler moment there.
Wow.
And I wish I hadn't seen that.
Yeah.
Because it would have been so shocking. But I would have known the moment you saw the butter in the pan.
Yeah, that was telling. Well, before you see the butter, you see him in restraints, I think.
You see him in restraints, but that could very well just be to hold him seated.
But
vertically.
It looks so much like the movie. It really
does. That was the first thing I thought.
Yeah. So you were there right when Will and Hannibal are at the table?
When he got strapped in.
Yeah, the strapping in is telltale, because when has Will ever needed to be restrained for dinner?
Well,
with Hannibal.
That's very true. He's usually on board.
If he was just joining for a typical dinner, there would have been no need for restraints.
So before we get to, obviously, the second to last scene, the penultimate scene of the episode, let's flash all the way back to the beginning here.
With some beautiful imagery of blood and water.
Yes, these blood droplets. Yes. The tendrils hitting the water, looking like jellyfish. Just, you know, there's got to be an entire second unit that's the blood macro shot unit.
We only do blood and water. That's it.
and some ink. And, Don't forget, there's ink. There's got to be some black ink going into water.
And and coins in a phone booth. It's like, okay, well, how do we get that shot? Well, just rip it open and get a close up. Come on, do I have to think of everything?
Come on. Yeah, the water imagery on the show continues in a beautiful way here.
Oh, absolutely, and just every episode ups the ante. There was a Reddit post saying, am I the only one who finds this incredibly dull and pretentious? And the response was yes.
yes, you
and
are.
And then that response got a whole lot of upvotes.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, we've seen this show without the artsiness, without the pretension. We've seen plenty of it. It's called NCIS. It's called Special Victims Unit. It's called Law and Order. It's called CSI. Choose your flavor there. I mean, we have this show. If you don't want the artsy, that's fine. You know what? You also have Ridley Scott doing a slightly less abstract version of the same kind of beautiful thing. I mean, really, if you're gonna watch Hannibal and complain about that aspect of it.
We don't
back
want you walking
down.
Anyway.
Back the fuck down.
We don't need your fandom.
No.
Can move along, folks. Just move along.
This show has a very special set of skills.
Yes.
And that's what it shows
and man,
us.
And it was beautiful in this episode.
It really was.
There were shots that... Oh.
Well, I mean, we were talking about how this episode is like if you took the True Detective season 1 credit sequence and stretched it to an entire episode of television. True Detective never lived up to its credit sequence.
It did not, unfortunately.
Hannibal's credit sequence is one of the least pretentious and artsy things about the show.
That's a little artsy. They do the blood splatters and the...
You know, when we were watching it, we watched this episode on demand, and the NBC's logo where they're splashing the different colors of NBC around, to then go into Hannibal where we get that exact same thing, except, you know, just red.
Blood.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting,
NBC tried
too.
Really hard.
Yeah. Yeah. I noticed that because I've been watching it on demand now that I'm out of town.
Yes, yes. Isn't it fun to go to an Olive Garden commercial after an especially
and talk about coming to the table? I was like, oh my goodness.
Yeah, we cut from Mason Verger's peeking Hannibal to, hey, come to Olive Garden.
Soup
We've
and
got breadsticks. So maybe instead of Olive Garden, which you would have to get up and leave. See, you can capitalize on the fact that we are all conflicted about being really, really hungry after watching Hannibal.
I'll say that I did not get hungry at the pigtails.
No, the pigtails and the marrow.
No.
I don't understand the whole marrow thing. And Mason didn't understand it either.
No, he
but
did not.
We'll get there. Let's talk about Hannibal's Walk of Shame.
Sorry. Okay.
Hannibal walking as day breaks in Florence. You know,
I think walking, he's missing shoes too. So.
No shoes. Stopping to put the tourniquet on. Just looking wrecked.
Yep. Limping a little bit.
It's nice to see legitimate aftermath.
Yes. Yes. And we've seen this in other scenes as well, the legitimate aftermath.
And when we see him in the tub with the droplets that come from nowhere, so it's another bit of our water droplets imagery that calls back to the finale of last season with the rain. And I got a real Christ imagery sense here.
Oh, when with they the over stigmata?
His hand. Oh, and
the hand.
It's the bloody, bloody hole in his hand.
Mm-hmm.
And
very much stigmata there.
And it makes me wonder what the show is saying.
Well, we've got Hannibal's the devil. Maybe Hannibal's not the devil.
No, Hannibal's the devil.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Okay.
Will, you could make the case. Yeah. No, the Christians wouldn't like that.
Yeah.
Well, do we care?
I thought that was interesting. Yeah. How is he the devil yet doing this stigmata?
I guess if you go with he's the fallen.
He is the fallen angel. But I really liked Hannibal asleep and Bedelia very, very competently sewing him up.
Mm-hmm.
With her stainless steel tray of Does everybody have one of those? And just not me? Maybe it's just I don't
I
usually
get a bullet
pulled.
I bet you they were Hannibal's tools. Those are Hannibal's tools.
Okay.
Bedelia just knows how to use them.
Did
I was
you notice
the same thing.
The clicking, the twisty clicking sound?
Yes.
Like something getting wound up, some gears being wound. This episode had a lot of great sound in it, too. And Bedelia goes to cut the thread.
The suture thread.
And we cut to
Potsy
being cut down by
very beautiful transition.
By the Questura. And Jack is just standing there watching. And Will came up and had some very distinct wounds, but not as much as you'd think for someone who went off a train car.
We don't know how much time has passed. There's no indicator of how much time has passed between Will being thrown off the train and now.
At most 2 days.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Because there's really, what is the indicator? What indicator do you have?
Intercutting between scenes? I don't know. I'm estimating less than a week.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think it was that long.
No.
He looked like he was in pretty bad shape. It just seemed well healed.
Yeah.
Like it healed quickly. But he did look in terrible shape. The gouges they put on his face. It was hard to look at.
So then Jack and Will go and look in at the torture exhibit.
Yes.
And I like the mention that the reason Hannibal was there because he likes the people that would come to the torture exhibit. It's not just that he's there at a torture exhibit, which would amuse him.
It's the type of people that
it would attract.
Excellent people watching.
So Hannibal doesn't worry. Knowing he's in danger won't rattle him any more than killing does.
I love the way Will is framed inside the torture implement.
Oh, when he's talking to himself,
he lines right up with it.
That's when Jack asks Will if he will slip away too. And Will says, part of me will always want to, while looking at the part of him that will want to slip away. That was a really well shot moment.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. No, one of the lines that really caught me was that Potsy was a bounty hunter and that he was alone and outside the law. just like we are,
yeah,
alone.
Now we are alone and outside the law.
And all I can keep thinking is the jacking up the law line.
Well, that's what he's going to have to do.
Jacking up the law
a little bit.
And then I get Judas Priest in my head. Because, you know.
Breaking the law, breaking the law.
Breaking the law. Jacking up the law, jacking up the law.
They're about to break some laws. They're like rogues. They're rebels. They're
vigilantes.
They've gone rogue. Yeah.
Well, and Jack makes the excellent point that assuming a corrupt system, which everybody is assuming a corrupt system, the worst thing they could do is point out who Fel really is to the Questura, because then you're going to have, you know, Potsy was a good man who fell for this. And just think of all the Questura people who weren't great men. The ones who made fun of Potsy and made him run errands because of his humiliation over Il Mostro.
Yeah, they really brought home that whole thing of how he was probably really poorly treated there.
Yeah. And they just dismiss it immediately later. The inspector is just like, no, Il Mostro died in prison.
Right,
this is not Il Mostro. Are you kidding? Come on.
Even with all the evidence staring them in the face, they're just like, no. We did everything right the first time. We make no mistakes.
Hmm.
So Will asks Jack the question, the million-dollar question, the question that's on everybody's lips is, why didn't you kill Hannibal when you had him with his arm broken in the wheel, when you knocked him down repeatedly, when you threw it? Why not, Jack, just finish this job? And Jack's reason is because he might need Will to.
Yeah.
So it appears that both of them have the mandate to be the one that takes care of the other. It's like Harry Potter. Neither can live
while
the other
survives.
Yeah. So one of them has to destroy or consume the other.
A Horcrux. Oh my God. Will is Hannibal's Horcrux.
That's perfection.
That's awesome.
I think we should send that to Brian Fuller. I think he'd be on board.
I think
completely.
He would. We need to get somebody to do some fan art of Will as a Horcrux.
Or both of them with kitchen knives.
Yes.
Oh my God, this is so great.
Duel.
This is so great. Somebody make this.
Well, this is an excellent opportunity to call on our audience.
Indeed.
Please do some Harry Potter / Will / Hannibal / Voldemort / fiction.
We'd love you for it.
Slash.
Multiple slashes.
Well, don't.
Come on. This community is very familiar with
true.
Slash.
We do know. But speaking of knives and sharp instruments.
we
get this great throwback to Bella and something that she said to Jack, and that is that he can cut out what's killing him.
Oh, yes.
And Jack uses this bit of wisdom from Bella on Will, saying you need to cut out
the part that will always want to go.
That always will want to go with Hannibal. And then we get this beautiful reflection in glass of Will looking into Will. But we get Jack in the same reflection, but Jack is just looking at Will. It's just Jack on one side. But then we switch over to Will and we get Will looking at Will. I thought that was a pretty interesting imagery that we have going along with this quote that goes back to Bella.
When this episode, you know, we talked about how Vincenzo Natali was on the This Is Our Design podcast. And while on there, he talked about transitions. And I highly recommend listening to that episode of This Is Our Design, because they talk about how, since it's television and you don't have a lot of time, you can make points by combining transitions. And that's one of the things that elevates this show. That's one of the things that makes this show exceedingly unique, is by having these transitional moments be unique. And there's a number of them in this episode.
And they're beautiful.
Yeah, really just lovely.
Not just unique, but almost profound and having these underlying inferences and meanings.
Yeah. And the combinations of people. We see a lot of that in this episode. People combining, people separating and coming back together, mm-hmm. people being overlaid upon each other and sort of half combinations. There's a lot of that imagery. And yes, Redditor, you are the only one who feels that that is unnecessary and pretentious. So we've got a lot of great Silence of the Lambs stuff in this episode.
Yes, we do.
When Hannibal is drawing, he's drawing the Duomo, which a lot of people, this is an interesting moment in Silence of the Lambs. A lot of people say that Hannibal knows where Buffalo Bill is from the moment he first meets Clarice. And Buffalo Bill is in Belvedere, Ohio. That's not a spoiler. It doesn't really matter. But at the beginning, he talks about this is the Duomo seen from the Belvedere. So the first conversation he has with Clarice, he says Belvedere, and that's where Buffalo Bill is. And so this is a direct reference to that moment in Silence and how he wants to be able to draw Florence from memory because memories will be all he has. And Hannibal has resigned that he is getting caught, which surprised me.
Yeah, the finality of it, that he's almost made peace with it.
I think, you know, there's a good part of Hannibal that always knew that's where he was going. I think he had the foresight to realize he couldn't get away with this forever. And so when game recognizes game, he sees them coming and it's not going to be you'll never take me alive, Copper. It's going to be
all right. Someday this will happen. No,
he'll do the thing he most wants to do first.
True.
You know, which actually, if you want to take that Wendigo imagery a little bit further, Hannibal eating Will's brain is very Wendigo, which is about the consumption of the yes. essence of another person.
To absorb its strength.
To absorb its strength, power, knowledge.
Yep.
So, yeah, that's... And it's fitting, then, that we see the Wendigo again in this episode for the first time since that really quick glimpse in episode 2, the campfire. Yeah. So I loved seeing Hannibal drawing. That's a really nice moment there. He sees his end and his beginning. And Bedelia has the very profound notion that history repeats itself and there is no escape, which really speaks to what we're seeing here, because again, we have Will coming to get Hannibal. Again, Hannibal is trying to kill him, destroy him, eat him. Again, we see the same cycle we've already seen. We're basically lapping last season at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
It's great because you get the idea that Hannibal's going to keep trying to do the same thing until he gets it right. Will is going to keep trying the same thing until he gets it right. It's everybody's experiencing a little Groundhog Day, I think. All our main characters.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it is kind of Groundhog Day.
Bedelia has packed for Hannibal.
Yes.
Because she is staying.
Yeah.
I like the way she took his drawings like a mother would from a child. Like, here, let me put away your drawing
done.
Things.
You're done. Let's
you're done,
let's
hun.
Move on.
Yes. Yeah, and you've packed rather lightly.
I really want to shout out to Gillian Anderson because, you know, she's been superb on this series in general. But this episode, I think we see pieces of her character that we've never seen before. We see a version of manipulation that we've never seen from her before. She plays comedic.
Yeah.
Very well. She plays high very well. Mm-hmm. I mean, not many people can be the strongest character yes. in the room while slumped in her chair because she's
She's drugged herself.
Yeah. It's Gillian Anderson is amazing in this episode.
Yes,
just
she is.
Amazing. She's the MVP.
MVP.
A tour de force.
And we get a call back to the first episode where Hannibal will help Bedelia tell the version of events she wants to be told.
Ah, yes.
Because she asks it of him.
Because she asks for help.
Yeah. And Bedelia, I mean, she's digging all over the place, but that she is not marinated enough.
For his taste.
I loved, you may make a meal of me yet, Hannibal.
Yeah.
And kisses him. But not today.
Yeah.
And I think the entire internet exploded in a serial Pharrell sobbing moment from Game of Thrones.
What do we tell death?
Not today.
Not today.
And here we get a ticking sound. And it's not the solid clock sound of Mizumono. But it's more like a broken sound.
To me, it sounds like the winding of gears, like you said earlier. Like, you know, the little toys that you drag backwards.
Oh, yeah.
You get that tick, 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 tick. Like you're building
you're winding
up this
something
tension.
Up.
Or a roller coaster.
Yeah.
When you're going up on a roller coaster. Where it's like chunk, chunk, chunk. And you're building up this momentum for something to be let go like an arrow.
There's a lot of good imagery there.
Regardless
of what it is supposed to be, there's a lot of good stuff there. So let's talk Mason and Cordell. And Cordell is a lot more competent than he was in the book. And
pretty much the movie.
More competent than he was in the movie. Maybe he was pretty competent in the book. I don't actually remember. It's been quite some time since I read the book.
True.
We open from after the credits with a pig's head.
Mm-hmm. In a fridge.
And then pig bodies.
Pig butts.
Pig butts. Specifically.
Pig butts.
And then we get to see a pigtail sliced off and cooked in, I mean, the food looked good.
I know. It was like almost Hannibal level here.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to eat it.
No, because we knew what it was.
It's sort of like the little bird from season two.
Or the fish jelly.
No, the fish jelly does not look good to me. There is nothing that looks
delicious.
When
they cook the whole bird.
Yes. It's the bird, like, I wanted to eat it, but I don't want to eat it.
Ew, no never. Uh-uh. Not with beaks and bone. No.
But I loved how Mason is all dressed up.
Mm-hmm. It's fancy.
And it felt like...
he's got
like
the white
a wedding
wine
tasting
and a red wine.
You know, he's at a banquet hall and he's being served the various foods that might be served at his wedding.
Yes.
It is a ceremony of sorts.
And the pigtails are meant to be like the fingers.
I like it's interesting that he's being coached on how to eat human. Cordell's literally coaching Mason on how to eat a human. Well, this will be very similar to fingers.
Yeah.
Only the fingers will have more meat. Why does he have to practice this?
Yeah.
No, he's tasting how the human will be served.
Okay.
Because what if he doesn't like it?
That's right,
because
he
Wouldn't
likes...
Wouldn't that be the worst thing
he didn't
ever
like the
if
fermented
they cook
bean
Hannibal
sauce. Okay.
And he doesn't like it?
Yes.
It's got to be perfect.
Cordell says that hands are how we touch the world. Remove a hand and you still feel the phantom fingers.
Phantom digits.
Phantom digits. And this is another Silence of the Lambs callback to Hannibal's ribbing of Senator Martin,
mm-hmm.
where he talks about when your daughter's on the slab, how will you tingle?
Yes.
The spitting into the Buddhist singing bowl. That was weird.
It was weird.
Yeah. It was like it just happened to be the only thing there that was close by.
No, Cordell, you could tell Cordell was very
excited.
He was
prepared for this.
About this.
Like he specifically wanted him to spit into this.
Yes.
And he said, what is it? Every gong is the beginning of a new day.
A new day, yeah.
A new day, that's right.
And this isn't meat. This is man.
Yes. That was so bizarre. This isn't meat. This is man.
But then we get something we haven't had since last season, which is Mason just wandering down his own trail in thought about his father and talking about how, you know, we get the meat is a people business. And he's sure his father has eaten someone at some point. Yes.
Right, right.
That was really bizarre. I'm sure he's eaten him at some point. It's like, well, okay.
And Mason gets called the apex predator.
Mm-hmm. Which he enjoyed.
He really liked that
yes.
idea.
That is his moment there. It's like, yes, all right.
Yeah,
so then
Rodell
we find out about Peking duck.
I did not know about this.
I didn't either. Miko?
Yeah, me either.
Did you? Okay. So Peking ducks are tortured.
Yeah, I didn't know this.
And then the skin is pumped up with air.
Puffed out with air. So you're literally removing the I would guess it would be going into the subcutaneous layer and pushing that dermis away from you're ripping the skin off.
You're skinning yeah. while the body is still inside
while
the
still
skin.
Still in whole. Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's very it's actually quite a
horrible.
It's
horrible.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is unnerving. That's the word that I couldn't come up with. I had no words.
Yes.
And then we cut to seeing Hannibal's face in an oven roasting.
Well, yeah, so you puff out the skin, then you slather it with the honey in the sauce, mm-hmm. and yeah. then you roast it until crispy.
Yeah, the hot honey sauce.
Hot
so
honey.
Not only,
hot
only
honey
are
sauce.
You puffed out, but it sounded like you have burning honey sauce
yes.
poured on
yes. you. Yes. And then while you're still alive, you get
yeah.
you get.
Do you think Will's nickname for Hannibal could be Hot Honey Sauce? And what? Hannibal's nickname for Will is My Little Graham Cracker.
Oh my goodness!
Well, I can't take credit for the graham cracker because that's a Fannibal thing.
Oh, okay.
But Hot Honey Sauce, that's a good nickname.
Goodness,
exactly. That's gonna be Hannibal's
Hannibal is
online
spicy.
Name. It's his chat name.
his handle.
His handle. It's gonna be Hot Honey Sauce.
So the shot of Mason walking up to the table, because Mason can walk in his dreams.
Of course.
But his
yes,
face is still damaged.
It is. His face is still disfigured.
The symmetry of this shot and the layout of this shot was incredibly reminiscent of the film The Cook, the Thief, His Wife, and Her Lover.
Yes!
Which is just an incredible achievement of filmmaking. And Michael Gambon plays an awful mafioso character, and Helen Mirren is amazing in it. And it's just a gorgeous film that has cannibalism in it. So
it's
you know,
a great movie.
It's surprising that Brian Fuller took this long to get around to it, honestly. But Mason wiping the sauce, the hot honey sauce,
yeah.
off of Peking Hannibal. And licking it and then just saying, transubstantiation.
Yes.
The one really unnerving part about this, other than thinking about Peking ducks.
One really unnerving part?
Yes, is the eyeballs. Hannibal's eyeballs.
Yeah, the dead eyeballs.
Oh,
the milky
that
eyeballs.
Really got me. Oh,
yeah.
That really got me.
Yeah.
It got me.
I know. That disturbed me,
and
too.
And that's surprising, because nothing usually gets you like that. That face you're making there.
Yeah. No, that still sits unwell with my stomach.
Well, it's you know what? Not amusing. Well, amusingly, Body Worlds exhibit.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. When I went to the Body Worlds exhibit, I was enjoying it thoroughly.
Okay.
I thought it was awesome and fascinating, and I'm really happy I went. But there was the one guy who's standing there holding all of his skin. So it's just a skinned cadaver who has his hand up, and in his hand is all of his skin. And that was fine.
Mm-hmm.
But then I got a little too close, and I saw his eyeballs, and I realized they weren't glass.
Yeah.
I don't know why I had just assumed all the eyeballs in Body Worlds were glass.
Mm.
But when I realized they weren't, I was so unnerved and I had to go sit down. I don't know what it is about that, but it was upsetting to me.
You were cool with everything until the eyeballs.
on board with the expanded horse. Yep. On board with the, you know, really, you should check out Body World's website.
The flayed man whose back muscles were turned into wings.
Yeah.
And the chess player whose back was exposed of all the nerves.
Just the eyeballs.
Okay.
Well, just like you were just fine with a Peking cooked man. Just
not the eyeballs.
Just scoop those out of there. Just get rid of them.
Ugh, just the vitreous fluid. Oh, man. Just stop it. So bad. Yes. So bad.
And so Mason awakens. And I almost got the I was having such a wonderful dream. But no. Instead, he awakens to bad news.
Bad news.
And bad news all over the news stations is of the death of his, what did he call it? His expensive corpse?
He just spent a lot of money for it's a bad word and I don't want to say it.
Oh, right.
Bad negative word for Italian person.
Oh, yes.
We will omit it.
I don't want to say it.
No, I understand. So Alana is a master manipulator in this.
Yeah.
Scene. Just
pulling strings like really, a little.
Really? So what if they trace Potsy to you?
Mm-hmm.
Better buy the whole department.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Spend all your money, Mason.
She's not even really playing it close to the vest. It's just like, you know, I guess you could always just buy the whole department. I mean, would that work? Would that take care of this problem? And Miko, I want to ask you about Alana's costume in this scene. What did you think about her
plunging neckline?
Yeah. I mean, is low cut being too generous? I mean, because it went, I mean, it may as well have been an unbuttoned shirt.
Well,
yeah.
I think it went all the way down to her belt.
It looked like it went all the way down to her belt. It really did. And it was interesting.
I don't have a problem with this.
The blouse inside was red.
Yes.
Yes.
Inside the white.
Yeah. Like, it was a very suggestive.
Her costuming has been very unusual and very interesting this episode. This season.
She's got a bit of the Hannibal flair going on with the sharp shoulders and the business
and the
suit and the plaid.
Plaid all over
the
this bitch.
She's been wearing.
She is almost the apex predator in this group of people.
She is. And
yeah.
It's funny because she's up against someone who very clearly thinks he knows everything.
Oh, I know.
And unlike Hannibal, he's completely wrong.
Mm.
Like, desperately wrong. So we're back in Italy. I mean, that was a quick scene.
Yeah, yeah. It was a quick, you know, let's check back in with the kids.
And I almost didn't recognize Margot with her big curly hair.
I know. That was an interesting look for her.
Like, her costuming and her hair are very different this season than they were last season.
She had pigtails in this season?
Yeah, she did have pigtails.
Which I was like, what?
Well, maybe it's she was dressing the way Mason liked her to dress last season. Now she's dressing the way she wants to dress this season.
Maybe, or vice versa.
Very true.
The wildness.
We know he likes the young ones.
Interesting.
Yeah, it was big.
Yeah.
Like maybe there's been extra humidity over right. there on at Muskrat Farms.
Yes.
I wanna mock up a Muskrat Farms sausage label.
Yes.
Easy to do?
No, it would be easy to do. I got to finish my Hannibal wine first.
Yeah, Hannibal wine first.
And I'm going to share that when I'm done with it. Just a nice big PDF that you can print a Hannibal wine label for yourself.
Slap it on any bottle.
And yeah, you know, it doesn't need to be Hannibal wine. You can throw it on any bottle.
Mm. Pretend.
Yeah. And enter the land of make-believe.
Right. For your
the
Hannibal
power of your imagination.
Yeah.
So Bedelia pulls a drug kit out from what looked like a drain.
It did look like a drain. I'm like, are we in Orange is the New Black here? Yeah. Like, you pull up the drains and finding drugs? What's going on?
And she's about to shoot up when Chio arrives.
It's a very interesting entrance.
With her gigantic rifle.
Right?
Yeah.
Like super sniper rifle going on here.
And I love Bedelia's, well, gee, you caught me. And I'm not even sure how to feel about it.
Because I don't know who you are.
I mean, Bedelia, she's got a very Hannibal in control streak here. Like, regardless of who is put in front of her. It's like, yeah, I got this. No problem.
Mm-hmm.
I got it. I learned from the best.
Oh, totally.
Yeah, let me just pull out my master manipulator mask and just roll with it.
So Chio calls herself family.
Yes, I thought that was interesting.
And then Bedelia identifies herself as his psychiatrist.
Right. Like, why would she? Oh, okay. She has no idea who Chio is.
Yeah.
Right. It may have been an easy
I think it's
out.
Hedging her bets. Yeah.
I guess.
It's like, this is, I can get around this. Let's not play the Mrs. Fell card with this woman with a rifle.
I guess.
But I'm just his psychiatrist. I could be just following him. I mean, I am shooting up in the bathroom.
Right. Of where he supposedly stays.
But you don't know me. And Chio is...
All psychiatrists do this, right?
Well, going back to Freud, sure.
Okay.
Chio says, you're like his bird. I'm his bird, too. He puts us in cages to see what we'll do. And I didn't realize that was a rhyme until I said it with that cadence.
That's interesting. Yeah. I didn't notice it was a rhyme either.
But Bedelia says, fly away or dash ourselves against the cage.
Yes.
Yes.
And so interesting because she's leaving.
Both of them just want to put Hannibal in other cages.
Yes. Well, Chio's flying right towards him.
Yes.
As Bedelia points out, and Bedelia's kind of just milling around, waiting.
Bedelia opened the door of the cage, shoved Hannibal out of it, and then closed the
and
door
closed
behind
him. Yeah. Basically.
It's like, nope, this is mine.
My cage. You get out. Bye-bye now.
And Brian Fuller in the Comic-Con panel, which I highly recommend, and there isn't a lot of spoilery stuff. If you're at all familiar with the book Red Dragon, I think at this point you can probably go ahead and, you know, watch the Red Dragon trailer, watch the Comic-Con thing, because it's not heavy spoilers. But he talks about Thomas Harris's purple prose and how he loves taking things that Thomas Harris wrote that have no business being dialogue and making them dialogue. And this one that Bedelia gets, did you watch as the wild beast within him turned from the teat and emerged into the world? That's a lot of text. That's a good one.
That's an awesome one.
I like when Bedelia calls Chio possibly Hannibal's worst mistake.
Yes, where she used to think Will Graham was his worst mistake. But now clearly it's Chio. And she's learned that in like 2 minutes.
Well, I mean, they have very good witty banter back and forth. So
then, thankfully, Chio leaves so Bedelia can get back to the task at hand shooting up.
Yep, she's got to finish that.
And sort of crawling her way toward that weird ceiling in their apartment and touching it with her sun-glowing hand.
Drugs.
Yeah. And oddly, this sequence, probably the least trippy in the whole episode.
Yes, actually, to be fair enough, yes, it's not. It is not the most drug-induced hallucination.
The sequence with a character actually shooting up.
Right.
Yeah.
Not
this
the most
mildly
trippy. Yeah. She can hear the colors. But then Jack and Will interrupt with the smug Mrs. Fell, I presume.
Yes.
I loved seeing Bedelia versus Jack and Will. Because nobody is buying anything anybody is saying.
It was a pretty interesting back and forth. I was very amused.
Yeah.
It was almost comical.
My husband is a doctor.
Uh-huh.
He's been treating my condition. What condition? And the way she says, I get confused.
Yes.
It's like, oh, dear. But Will, oh, my God. When Will said, I don't believe you, like.
It reminded me of when Bedelia comes to see Will.
Well, yeah, that's a direct lift from that scene. But this is the first scene where I feel like Will has the FBI agency back in him.
Okay.
That is the first moment of Will playing for the good guys that I could feel, because Will has not been like that. Will's been hazy man talking to himself and trying to convince Chio that they're the same. Will has not been
full on FBI Will. Guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No,
he's
I get it.
But he also has a wonderful line here. You expect us to believe you somehow lost yourself in the hot darkness of Hannibal's mind?
In the hot darkness.
You get the feeling Will wants to lose himself in the hot darkness of Hannibal's mind.
Or Hannibal something.
Oh, there's going to be a lot of hot darkness. That's the name of their porno. Hot darkness.
Hot darkness.
Or boy band.
The hot darkness of...
Hot honey sauce, yes.
Hot honey sauce in the hot darkness of Hannibal's mind.
Well, hot honey sauce could be the album name, and hot darkness is their duo name. I love everything about this.
A little bit silly.
Me too.
So it turns out Bedelia is taking the same cocktail Hannibal served Miriam Lass. You've been freebasing your alibi. And then Jack's just like, you know what?
Yeah.
I'm not even mad. I'm kind of impressed.
I'm not even mad.
Bravo. And that's what we were talking about last episode, where Will and Jack give two shits about Bedelia.
No.
She's just as manipulative as Hannibal is. They're like, they're onto her bullshit.
They are, but ultimately, they've got the good sense to focus on one criminal rather than, like, you could see someone who doesn't have good forward thinking being like, okay, well, let's start talking to the supervisors at the Questura to say, you know, all your guys, they're on the take. It's like, no, you've got one guy. Head over there and bring down Dr. Fell.
I like the moment of what appears to be, okay, she's drugged, but she's acting as Bedelia now, not acting
Bedelia?
Pretentious or potential Miss Lydia Fell.
I noticed that so you say he killed a chief inspector,
uh-huh.
But there are no police here.
Right.
I mean, what's that about?
Yeah, like, go ahead and try to press charges. See what'll happen. Just go ahead.
But that's when they realize that everybody's on the take. And yes. Bedelia has the interest in my husband is certainly getting competitive.
Yes.
Yes. She's very funny in that state, in that sort of drug state.
Oh, she is hilarious in this entire episode. Yeah. And she brings back slow talker Bedelia, too. You know, she does a little of her slow stuff, and she's cycling through. I would watch a series about Bedelia. maybe that could be the procedural for next season.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Bedelia, maybe, you know, pair her with a mob boss.
Ooh.
Yeah, just something that the plebs will enjoy, the unwashed masses of NBC, the people who don't know shit about quality programming. I'm talking about the public. I'm not talking about NBC. NBC clearly knew they had something good, just could no longer justify it.
Yeah. People who want less pretentious moments in their TV show.
Yes. People like that. You know, I saw an advertisement for, I don't know, it's a show that starts with a girl coming out of a gym bag covered in tattoos, and those tattoos are all clues to crime.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, that That's interesting. Unfortunately, absolutely everything else about the show, absolutely everything from the bland hero to the bland banter, everything else is standard procedural. It's depressing.
Yes, very much so.
This was one of the episode on demand commercials.
That's when we saw it. Yes.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Because that's when we saw the Heroes trailer,
yes,
too.
Yes, it was one of the, wow, we're going to watch
six commercials, yeah.
In between every break.
Nico, you probably saw the same commercials because we were both watching Comcast on demand there.
You know what's funny? I watched this one on demand with no commercials. It's the only one.
Wow. You lucked out.
Lucky.
Yeah, halfway through, we were like, should we just go to Hulu?
We can't forget the one last funny jab that Bedelia puts in where Will disappears and Jack's like, Will, Will. And she goes, wonder who'll catch him first.
Yes. Yes, Will vanishes as soon as the mention that the rest of the police are in on it.
Yes, he's like, poof.
And he vanishes the way, I don't know, like Batman and Commissioner Gordon.
Yes, yes.
Jack's just like, damn it.
He's caught again.
Let's fire up the bat signal again, the Will Graham signal.
The Will Graham
it's
signal.
It's just a graham cracker. But my little graham cracker has always been my favorite of the Will and Hannibal in love memes. It's really sweet.
It sounds pretty adorable.
It's always my little graham cracker.
My little graham cracker.
Wow. So speaking of adorable, let's talk about Margo watching the eel.
I hope this is a like.
Be careful.
Yeah. But careful, there's something really cool about eels.
I think the only reason we see the eel, it's like Chekhov's eel. You know, if you see the gun in the first reel, it's going to go off by the third reel. So the only reason we're seeing this eel in this episode is because we're going to see this eel again, and that's all we're going to say.
We saw this eel way back.
Oh, no, we've seen the eel before. I think the only reason we're being reminded of the eel.
So anybody who read the books, you'll know exactly why I'm so excited about eels.
Yes.
Eels are exciting. But you want them.
Bring on the eels. Bring on the eels.
More eels. More eels.
Margo is telling Mason that she made new friends. The whole Questura, in fact.
Mm-hmm.
So she's bribed all of them.
Following Alana's advice.
And Mason gives her, you give me what I want. Let's talk about what Margo wants. And we get a line.
A throwback to the book.
Which is a throwback to last season, even. I think we True. Got what Margo wants.
Yes.
Margo is upset about, reasonably so, about the fact that she cannot have a baby.
Well, it sounds more like in this scene that it's Mason who wants the baby
more.
Well,
and then Mason goes out of his way to talk about how he would love a child.
Take parenting classes.
Yes. We could raise it together.
Yes.
Be a family.
But the best part of this scene was Mason talking about how much he regrets what he did. But can you blame him? She weaponized her uterus.
Yes.
She was waving it around like a loaded weapon.
I'm not sure that wasn't my favorite part.
That was my favorite line.
That part kind of got me upset. But
well, I don't like him, and I don't like what he's saying. That's just a great line.
I liked how he looked at her and said, "Have you stumbled across any uteruses lately?"
Yes,
that was perfect. What are you planning?
Well, a cool thing about the weaponized uterus line is that is actually a line from a deleted scene from last season. And if you look online, you can see Michael Pitt's Mason Verger saying the same thing to Margo about weaponizing her uterus last season. So it's obviously something that got cut for time. But how do you leave a line of dialogue like that on the floor?
No.
You don't. You pick it up and you wave it around.
like a loaded weapon. Okay, I want to talk about my favorite fucking scene probably in the whole season. And I was shocked that this popped up as my favorite scene over the brutal beatdown last episode.
Mm-hmm.
But Hannibal is sitting in the art gallery sketching Primavera. And Will comes in, and they just sit there, and smile at each other for a moment, and not smile in a bad guy smile way.
In a sweet, in a loving way.
You see, really, truly, you strip away everything that's happened. These are two characters who actually love each other. And that's so wonderful to see. I mean, it's horrible because it's going to end badly.
Right.
But it's really just an amazing moment. And it's just this two-person scene. And we get little glimpses of the aria, the very slowed-down version of Goldberg Variations that was used in Mizumono, in that tremendous last act of Mizumono. And Will and Hannibal, if you rewatch the scene, you'll notice that their wounds mirror each other. So Will's wounds are on one side of his face, and Hannibal is sitting, so his wounds are on the same side as Will's wounds. So on the inside, you have the wounded man, and then on the outside, you have the whole man.
Squish them together.
Just cram them together.
Now kiss.
And kiss. But Hannibal has one of the sweetest lines here, where he says, "If I saw you every day forever, Will, I would remember this time."
Yeah, that part got me right in the feels. I'm like, oh.
That's right up there with as heartbroken as Hannibal is in Mizumono, where you get that weird conflicted feeling as a viewer. It's like, this is a monster.
Mm-hmm.
And he was heartbroken. When he talks about in Mizumono, he talks about, "I gave you a great gift and you didn't want it."
Mm-hmm.
I was making a space for you in my life. I was setting this up for us to be together. And we have a little bit more of that in this episode, where he talks about how he really would have loved to show Will Florence.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
All this hit right the feels.
It's very touching.
And Will says, "It's strange seeing you here in front of me. I've been staring at after images in places you haven't been in years." And then Hannibal does a nursery rhyme, which, I mean,
it was a little odd.
It was a little odd. I'd heard this one before, and I wonder if it's something from the book. I mean, it's obviously a Mason Verger reference. To market, yes. To market, to buy a fat pig. Home again, jiggity, jiggity jig. Jig.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, all right. But I liked what Will was saying.
It did sound odd coming out of
Hannibal. It did.
It did. Will was saying that he did this journey because he had to understand Hannibal before he saw him. I think what we're seeing is Will coming to terms with his feelings for Hannibal. You know, he does love Hannibal. He sees what goodness there is in Hannibal, but he recognizes that he can't allow it to continue to function. He can't let him live, regardless of what he feels. And I think this is Will's moment of clarity.
They talk about how the blurring of the past and the present, and how
the difference between past and what is it for you, what is it for me?
And for Will, it is before Hannibal and after Hannibal. Like, Hannibal is the be all end all.
He's the nexus. He's
alpha,
the
alpha and omega, beginning and the end.
He's the paradigm shift.
Yes.
He's when everything changed.
Which again was another heart-touching moment there. Like,
just talking there's about another, the there's another version of this world where Will is just a happy teacher who said no to Jack.
He said no, I'm just gonna keep teaching classes.
I'm not into loaning out my imagination. I'm gonna hold on to it. Get out of here.
I'm not gonna let you break me.
So how about the lovely line, "How is Chio?" "Oh, she pushed me off a train."
Yes.
Atta girl. Yes. Oh, my Atta God. Girl.
But Will really articulates his feelings here. "Every crime of yours feels like one I'm guilty of. not just Abigail's murder, every murder stretching backwards and forward in time.
And
so it shows how Hannibal has actually, you know, consumed Will's mind, mm-hmm. which is an amusing turn of phrase.
It is.
Considering what's coming. But it's Will is stuck. And it's the same thing that Hannibal was stuck. He has to eat Will. That's the only way. And Will was stuck. He has to, I don't know if he's planning on killing Hannibal when he pulls the knife on him. He might just be planning to wound him enough so he can take him to jail and actually get him in jail.
We'll never know.
No, we'll never know.
But here's another little bit of Voldemort and Harry Potter shit here. Freeing yourself from me and me freeing myself from you is the same. And the question of will either of them survive the separation?
And Will discusses, before that, he discusses how Hannibal and Will have begun to blur together. And that is when Hannibal says, and that's how you found me. But yes, they are conjoined.
So
yes.
This didn't strike me this way on first viewing, but on rereading my notes here, Hannibal says now is the hardest test. And so the Saw movies are not great. But in the Saw movies, there's often the case of if you had only followed the directions, you would be fine. I told you exactly what was going to happen. I told you exactly where you needed to be. You would have been fine. And so Hannibal tells Will this is the test, not letting rage and frustration nor forgiveness keep you from thinking. And if Will had not pulled a knife on Hannibal, Chio would not have shot him. Because that's
true.
I think all she's doing is protecting him. And it looked like Hannibal was surrendering. What do you think?
Oh, I don't know about that. I don't know about Chio's intentions. And I don't know about... I think, honestly, she was targeting Hannibal first.
I think she was looking at Hannibal.
Oh, maybe. But then she...
Maybe to see if he's okay.
Looks over at Will and sees the knife and then shoots. Right. So I feel like she was deciding something to me,
mm-hmm.
looking at the two targets. Like, which one of these two men is worse?
Well, clearly Hannibal.
Well, she didn't make that decision, did she?
No, she didn't. Will should have left her in Lithuania.
Yeah. I was a little bit more jaded in how... this was chosen to be framed, and not that it's showing Chio making a decision or making a choice. I thought it was like a purposeful red herring for the audience.
I think so too.
That at that
yeah,
moment,
we see Hannibal, and so we think that that's going to be it
with her.
Yeah,
yeah, and by having it's like, oh wow, so she's going to do wait? No. She's wait. Is she Hannibal? Is Will? So that when it happens, it's more exciting for the audience, because in that moment it puts us off balance because
right.
we don't know. So whether or not that's a real internal struggle for her may be irrelevant here. It may have just been, and I know I use this word a lot on the show, it may be a device in which to create tension for the viewer.
Yeah. I'm completely on board with that theory. It's a device.
And I kept thinking, well, why did she save Hannibal? Why, after all of the dealings with whatever Hannibal did to Misha, after keeping her a slave to keeping that one man alive because she didn't want him to kill him, all the years, all of the torment or being caged, however you want to look at it, why not kill Hannibal? Why not?
Because she wants him in a cage.
Why not be violent when violence is the right thing to do?
No, I see what she wants to do. I mean, she wants to make Hannibal
so
the prisoner.
Wound him.
Well, yeah, okay. I mean, she wounded Graham.
I'm sure that if she wounded Hannibal, Will would have stopped.
Graham. It is Graham. Isn't that just, if you read the book, Thomas Harris is one of those authors that just refers to characters by their last name.
Well, and that's anyway, it. Will would have probably not like slit Hannibal's throat or anything. You know what I mean? Like he would have taken care of Hannibal, I think, in the same way that Hannibal takes care of Will. He would have put on that caretaker role instead of...
I don't know.
Like,
maybe he would have pulled out an entire quiver of arrows and stabbed Hannibal in the gut. You know, like Edward Norton's version of Will Graham. So bad.
Yes.
Anyway.
It's not Edward Norton's fault.
No, it is Edward Norton's fault. Yes.
I like him.
Seriously. You watch that movie, Edward Norton... Well, I suppose it's also the director's fault. But Edward Norton is making zero choices as an actor. Like, none. Like, he may as well have been on the telephone. It is literally a blank slate. And Will Graham is a lot of things, but he is not a blank slate.
No.
Especially following, you know, everyone's like, okay, we're going to improve on Manhunter. We're going to give a legitimate adaptation of this novel that's going to improve on Manhunter. It's going to bring Anthony Hopkins back. And how do we improve on Manhunter? By taking William Peterson's odd but genuinely good performance, a little hammy, and just making this... I don't know, NCIS. I'm really hard on NCIS
you
this
are.
Week.
That's
I've never
okay.
actually seen
they
NCIS.
They can handle it.
No, but generic white bread procedural lead. That is who Edward Norton is playing. It may as well have been on CBS. No. CBS actually does procedural pretty well. It may as well be on ABC.
ABC Family.
Yes.
ABC Family Procedural.
Burn.
CSI Kids.
Well, I did think that he played him kind of like really lightweight. I was like, what is he doing? It's like the Hardy Boys. What is he? Encyclopedia Brown? What's going on?
Edward Norton looks like he's 12. I don't care how old he is.
Yeah.
He looks like a 12-year-old. And Anthony Hopkins, you know, he got a little bit bigger, but he still looks like he could throw down.
Oh, yeah.
Like, when the chips are down, he would pick up the desk and smash it into Edward Norton's face. And just little itty-bitty Edward Norton over there. Oh, there's so many things to dislike about the way Hannibal gets captured.
Oh, we could go on and on about this movie. It can be an entire...
So many things. Let's move on.
An entire podcast of how angry we are.
It may be an entire podcast once we are done with the Red Dragon arc. So... Let's talk about kaleidoscopic sex.
And the sexy psychedelic music that was also in the surgery room.
Well, it's like the Verger Eastern music.
Mm.
I mean, it seems to be the family soundtrack.
Their theme song. But
now, are you guys okay with the fact that they did not set this up at all, except for, you know... The lines that I thought were very amusingly foreshadowing the you can come in whichever door. It can be your door. It can be your entrance, that stuff. But
I thought there'd be more build up.
Yeah.
Yeah. They didn't do
it. It did seem
anything.
Rather abrupt.
Well, we got the post-coital, oh, by the way,
yes.
I'm going to bring your brother down from Alana. And so... We can, I guess, assume from that they've been talking about this, that Margot's on board with this plan, that they've been talking for a while, that they've built a relationship for a while. And I guess that's a good example of filmmaking that doesn't need to spoon feed us. But it seemed abrupt. It seemed abrupt the way Potsy suddenly advancing his story seemed abrupt. The way a number of major plot points feel abrupt because they probably took way too much time in the first four episodes of the season.
Yeah. It was like, there's no time to explain. Let me sum up.
There's no time to explain. So here is some kaleidoscopic lesbian sex.
Well, I guess if you think about the psychology of how pretty much destroyed Alana's going to be around relationships, and probably pretty destroyed around relationships with men for quite some time after Hannibal.
Actually, yeah, she did. She had a bad moment with Will, where she was sort of in love with Will, and then Will was the Chesapeake Ripper, and then she was sort of in love with Hannibal, and then Hannibal was the Chesapeake Ripper. I don't know. I'm not crazy about the idea that that might make one gay.
No, I'm not saying that.
I'm not saying you're saying that. I'm saying that a lot of people could infer that because we've had no buildup from the character.
We also had Will and Margot and their sexual experience bond born out of look at my scars that Hannibal gave me and look at my scars that my brother gave me. So it would seem like it would be safe.
So that's just how Margot gets laid.
By
comparing scars.
Fine, I'm done.
No, I'm on board. I want in the next episode, which has a lot to do already, I would like a little bit more backstory about this relationship. So instead, let's talk about a kaleidoscope of sex. Let's talk about faces blurring into each other. The thousands of vulvas that show up when you blend arms together in a kaleidoscope.
It was quite suggestive.
I liked how this particular use of film style both was revealing and also obscuring. Like, it didn't show anything. It didn't show anything, really. Yeah, it was the outsides of legs and the outsides of arms. No nipples, no... I mean, and it's not like this is a particularly PG show here. I mean, we've seen nipples.
We haven't seen nipples.
No nipples? Oh, I thought we've seen nipples. Okay.
No, remember, this is the PG show that blurred the asses in Primavera.
Okay. All right. So maybe not.
And said, just, you know, chuck some more blood in those asses and it'll be fine. As long as we don't see the ass crack, you know, throw as much blood as it takes to not see the ass crack. And it doesn't matter that they're angels.
Right. And they're flayed open.
Yeah. That's legitimately the solution to seeing the ass cracks of the angels in season one.
I thought it was a beautiful way to obscure and tell the tale of sex.
When the kaleidoscope was wonderful, but there was that moment where they're both kneeling on the bed and the digital lighting that was added to their bodies, so you couldn't see their bodies, but you could see their knees and you could see their heads. And like the middle was a dead zone. It was like the signal was being jammed. I'm hoping that's one of the many things that in the producer's cut on the Blu-ray, we don't have to put up with that shit.
So it's not like trying to watch porn on cable without paying for it.
It did almost slide into that.
I was surprised how long it was.
It really went on for a long time.
And it was, you know, their faces were blending in and out, and you got the suggestion of hands on bodies. And it was surprisingly long for how much we have to say.
And starting with Margot making out with herself.
Yeah.
Because that's how the scene opens, is Margot comes out of herself, looks at herself, makes out with herself. And then we see that it's Alana, but there's that great blending of the eyes together and the faces separating and coming back together. And then the finale of this whole sequence, when both Margot and Alana are looking in opposite directions and their heads have merged, sort of like the Janos.
Conjoined twins.
Yes, and the conjoined twins.
Which is
so maybe Alana and Margot are having their own awesome, sexy adventures where they are as close as Will and Hannibal.
Yeah,
I mean it's possible.
It's their own that version
show.
Of Hot Honey
NBC would keep on the air.
Yes.
So then we get the exposition. Margot Mason has no intention of sharing his lead with the FBI, but Alana does. And Margot has one thing she needs to get from her brother before he goes to prison. and asks Alana if she has any experience harvesting sperm.
Because, you know, she might be in her skill set. Never know.
Alana's full of surprises. and more of a character than she has ever been. So maybe that's on her resume. I mean, Margot probably should be able to do it. She has worked on a farm for her entire life.
That's true.
Although something tells me she didn't really do all the dirty work.
I like in the conversation when Alana was helping Margot dress as they talked. And because she had that wrap dress. And it was interesting to see her hands have that long playing moment as she wrapped the belt around and then tied the knot.
And it's a moment of closeness to indicate that this is not just a one-off for the characters, I think.
It's not a wham bam, thank you, ma'am. We're going to have some aftercare.
And their aftercare is going to be to do terrible things to her brother Mason Verger. I don't know. I hope. Someone needs to put that beast down.
Yes.
But who knows who it'll be? Bedelia and Jack are talking to an inspector. And I say an inspector because I looked him up on IMDb. And this poor guy doesn't even have a name. He's just Inspector.
Aw. He really gives the beat down on Bedelia, though.
Oh, he does. Indeed, he plays it so smugly.
Yes. But
Bedelia is playing it so well, like, that's my husband. I am Lydia Fell. And Jack, I guess sick of the game, mentions that if the inspector were to look on the website, he would find it that Dr. Fell is Hannibal Lecter.
Yeah.
And throws out the bounty. And for that kind of money, I can hardly blame them, Potsy, for doing that. Can you?
Yes.
And he stares down the inspector and then gets kicked out for his trouble. Well, you can go, Jack.
He wasn't too subtle with that suggestion.
So then we rejoin Hannibal and Will, where Hannibal puts Will down on some apartment somewhere to get the bullet out. And as he's holding Will, who's in severe pain, he's got that same positioning as when he hugged Will as he was gutting him, with Will's head over his shoulder. And it's another one of those really oddly sweet moments.
Yes, an intimate moment.
When he asks about Chio, he asks who killed the tenant.
Yes.
Was it Chio or Will? And he's very happy that it was Chio.
Mm-hmm.
It gives it an excellent.
Yeah. But he doesn't have the additional information that Will sort of set it up.
Oh, no, he'd love that too.
Yes, it's true.
And actually, that would be even better, I think.
Will's not really in a position here to start explaining things, because shortly after taking out the bullet, he gets a sip of something and very quickly goes into...
Hannibal inject him?
Oh, that's right, under his arm. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. But he does drink something, and I thought that was...
Yeah, it's like, here,
honestly, this is what I thought was going to happen, was after he
was giving him the thyme infusion.
Yeah, yes. That was... You know,
this soup is terrible.
This soup is terrible.
This whiskey is terrible.
Yes.
But Hannibal has the wonderful line, you dropped your forgiveness, Will.
When he holds the knife.
Yeah. You forgive like God forgives. Mm. Would you have done it quickly, or would you have stopped to gloat?
And then I loved how Will said, does God gloat?
And then Hannibal says, as though
he didn't believe that God did.
Yeah.
And Hannibal said, often.
The sequence is one of those that's so similar to when they would just sit in the office and have conversations. Often.
Yeah.
But then Will goes into his drug haze and drops the knife right into Hannibal's hand.
Mm-hmm. And Hannibal, they focus in on this. Yeah. Hannibal closing the knife and taking it away.
But it's very much the now Will is in his hands.
And then we get some great imagery.
The smoke against white.
Yes. This looked to me like it was black ink in, that's what I in thought water too. With a white background.
I was thinking of black ink.
Could be either.
Yeah. Like, so this looks like you have like a fish tank or something with a white background and you're dropping black ink into it. And it's just sort of swirling and mixing the way that all the shots of blood have in the past.
Yeah. When they transition into them back in therapy again, it was almost like the ink became an ink blot that became that scene.
Oh, became the Rorschach test. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
When you see both Will and Hannibal's faces in the ink.
Well, that's in the antlers. So first.
Before, at the beginning, you see faces. And then mm-hmm. Will can smell the butter, can almost smell the butter
yes.
that is frying there next to him. And Hannibal has the discussion about taste and smell are the oldest senses, closest to the center of the mind, and they play on the dome of our skull.
Mm-hmm.
This is why dinner is better than theater.
Yes. I love that.
It's so abstract.
Yeah.
I don't remember exactly the line because, you know, there's so much here to write down. But they play on the dome of our skulls, I think, like miracles is the end
yes.
of that line.
Is the end of that, like miracles. I'd forgotten about that.
Yeah.
Like miracles.
So Hannibal approaches. We've got the reoccurring motif this season of people walking from out of focus into focus. And Hannibal approaches into focus and then becomes the Wendigo. And the Wendigo's antlers are made of this inky smoke. And in the antlers are Will and Hannibal. But probably yep. in the least subtle moment in this whole sequence, the antlers swirl together. As
yes.
Will and Hannibal swirl together. Okay. I get
becoming
it.
Conjoined, so to speak.
And then we heard the line that had I not seen what was happening this episode, would have set me on edge. The what's for dinner? Never ask. It spoils the surprise.
It spoils the surprise. Yes. It's like we all knew.
Well, but
something
I mean,
dastardly was going to happen.
I thought maybe it was going to be Jack. Maybe that was Hannibal's plan, to feed Jack to Will, to do what they started. And they even talk about how they had that that intended dinner that was supposed to be Jack and
yes.
Will and Hannibal. But the menu was all wrong.
It was all wrong, yes. The fact that also Jack is being sedated is very much... I'm spacing Eddie Izzard, how he was sedated while he was being fed to himself. So
yeah.
it did lend itself to sort of cheating a little bit that it might be Jack.
There's a number of moments where, I mean, basically what this is doing for the people who have read Hannibal, have seen Hannibal, is making us wonder, okay, who is getting their brain eaten? Which of these
yes.
characters? Is Chio going to come in at the last moment, get knocked out, and get her skull sawed off?
It's everybody's brains are going to get eaten. It's going to be a smorgasbord.
Everybody's. So here's where we get the soup isn't very good. It's a parsley and thyme infusion, more for myself, more for my benefit, my sake, than yours. Will asks if they're expecting company. So again, that could be anyone. At this point.
Mm-hmm.
But it's one of those great Hannibal transitions that we really haven't seen since season one, where somebody asks about a monster and then we see Hannibal. Here we ask about, are we expecting company? And we see the two people who might possibly be this company. We see Jack arrive and share the most uncomfortable elevator ride with Chio.
Yes, with
Chio. They both size each other up.
I kept waiting for her to, like, stab him or do
yeah.
something. Like, she's looking down at the gun like she's gonna grab it and shoot him or something crazy, like super action packed in a
it would have
tight
been difficult
elevator.
Oh, pick up his gun and shoot him.
Yeah, because
yeah, right.
she looks down at his pocket and sees
she
the,
did
the
see
pistol
it.
Right
mm-hmm.
And
she just wimps out.
No, she's not going to take her gun in there.
No.
Her gun is almost as tall as she is.
Assemble it. It's like, yes. Jack, can you just give me a moment here? Just one moment.
I would like to shoot you, but I need a moment.
Yes.
Some assembly required.
Yeah. Wait a minute in Japanese. Chotomate. Okay.
So he lets her off first, and then she says wrong floor and goes down the stairs. Jack's not buying it.
No, he's like, bullshit.
Which is good, because he's a smart man.
He shouldn't buy it.
Instead, but he knows he's got a job to do, and that job is to see if Will is there.
And in danger.
So he enters, seeing Will at the table, and the terrifying, he's under the table, Jack.
Oh, yes. God. Okay, so the urban legends about people being underneath cars.
Under the bed, under the cars.
And
yeah.
cutting the Achilles tendon. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. This totally brought right back there. A
that
bunch of nightmares
on Hannibal's
I used to
face,
have.
Like a predator, like really a predator. And I heard the best thing, and it's Jack's Achilles heel is having his Achilles tendon cut.
Is having an Achilles heel.
Yeah, this is probably going to make me check
obvious.
Underneath
yeah,
my car from now on. All the times I'm parked in a dark parking lot and there's no cars around me, I'm going to be looking underneath my car from a distance to make sure there's nobody waiting to cut my Achilles tendon.
I've already seen the worst version of this, and well, I've seen two. Really, it's a tie between High Tension, the amazing French film with the terrible ending, and the horrifying Miko Hughes in Pet Sematary slicing Fred Gwynne's Achilles tendon. And I think Miko pulls it out there by being a terrifying toddler with a razor blade slicing Achilles tendons. Hannibal's scary, yes, but I got to give the edge to little Miko Hughes.
To creepy children.
Yeah.
Creepy children
definitely
usually
trump
all.
Creepy adults. Every time. I'm imagining going upstairs to bed and actually like running and jumping onto the bed so they don't have to stand by the side of the bed.
Don't worry. There is so much shit under our bed. Nobody's under there.
I think we have a massage table under our bed.
There is a massage table under our bed.
It would have to be a very, very small person. Like a child.
Like a child.
Like
oh,
a child.
There we go.
Oh, God. No, I'll never sleep again.
Yeah, we're both checking under the bed tonight. So here's where Bedelia's entire plan pays off. As the inspector gets really creepy.
And almost, like, molesty creepy. Yeah.
But I love the way he plays it. First he shows, you know, he's talking about Fell's file.
Yeah.
And, I also happened to get his French file. He looks a little different with a beard, doesn't he? And, here's Lydia Fell's passport. And Bedelia's still sticking with,
she's
with
like,
her.
That's, no, I'm Lydia Fell.
I am
Fell.
Lydia Fell.
I'm Lydia Fell.
Which is really exactly what she should be doing if anyone wants to believe that she actually thinks she's Lydia Fell, if she's been brainwashed.
She's a psychiatrist. Mm-hmm. She knows how to play the, great. No, I can't remember the syndrome.
Stockholm syndrome.
Stockholm, yeah. Thank you.
It's Bedelia Du Maurier auditioning for the Patty Hearst story here.
Yes, thank you. That's exactly what I was thinking.
But then the inspector says, I don't care who you are. And I don't care. And I liked her. I understand that in this moment, you do not work for the Questura.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Again,
and
letting her lucidity show through.
Can she be rescued by the brave Questura or apprehended? And immediately, there's actual Bedelia again.
Mm-hmm.
And my husband was hoping to meet a friend before he left Florence. I want to take a moment and applaud the writers for not saying my husband was hoping to have an old friend for dinner before he left Florence. Because that would have been a bridge too far for me. One too many.
But her her giving them up is delightfully understated and direct at the same time.
He will be someplace where no one is supposed to be.
Where's no? Yes. And I'm assuming this is Soliato's apartment. I don't know if we're going to learn more because this season has been very sparse with details.
They had a scene where when I think it was when Jack was going in, you saw the names of who was in what apartments, and it is the Soliato last name.
Oh, how did I
miss
that?
The seventh floor. Yeah.
Well, there you go.
So
there's three of us on the podcast.
There's like a little marquee thing. You know how sometimes you go into buildings and there's a little directory and you see his last name on the on the menu, so to speak.
So in Soliato's in Soliato's apartment, Jack has been given his sedative and has a hanging bag for, you know, just little drip.
Constantly be sedated.
And all he's going to need to be able to do is chew.
Oh dear. Yep.
And Hannibal he's genuinely curious what Jack might think of his museum displays. You know, it's a different kind of evil minds museum.
Yes. Jack said not so different.
And then Hannibal says, Jack was the first to suggest getting inside your head. Now we'll get to chew quite literally what we'd only done figuratively. As he pulls out the bone saw and begins to cut into Will's head. And
dun, dun, dun.
I mean,
I love how it was in a really intricate, like almost
an
like,
ornate box. Yeah.
Yes. That is not what bone saws come in real life, but
I mean, you get the feeling
it's a special
that the
occasion
moment,
bone saw.
Yeah. It's
there's
it's
a bone saw
it's
store.
It's the company bone saw. It's for company.
Yes, the formal bone saw.
It's if the Pope shows up.
Yes.
It's the Pope bone saw.
When the crystal is out and the nice tablecloth. It's not the Chinette bone saw.
So just as in when Jack was dying in the cupboard, the blood dripped upward. Here we see the blood flying as it would, but also drifting upward, and we have that amazing shot where the entire scene is reflected in the droplet of blood as it floats toward the ceiling and then toward the sky.
Towards a blue sky with white, big, billowy clouds.
Which, I don't know, if I didn't know Will was going to survive the scene, I'd assume that was it for him.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was quite gruesome and graphic, too.
It was.
Yeah,
and he's shaking violently from the reaction that you would have to having a bone saw against your skull.
Well, I think Brian Fuller probably was not willing to do the cruelest thing he could have done, which would be to end the episode there.
Yeah, that would have been much crueler.
And instead, we get a little bit more of that specific Eastern music. And we're back with Mason Verger imagery, the hung frozen pigs, and then Will and Hannibal hanging.
When I first saw this, I'm like, wait a minute, is this a dream sequence inside Will's head? What is this is not a thing. That's not really them. And I'm like, oh, wait a minute. They have bruises and cuts on their face, and Will has a mark on his head.
And Will has about a quarter. Really, somebody needs to bandage that up, probably soon.
Yes.
Well, actually, to be honest, if you're going against a forehead, you're not going to be hitting major arteries. With as little cutting looks like Hannibal was able to do before whatever apprehension took place, I don't think he would have cut anything near the temple. The temple would have been bad news.
Right.
But it looks like he was mostly surface on the forehead, which you can get a decent size gash, which is generally what happens if you are not wearing your seatbelt and you hit the windshield, or a lot of injuries happen that way from minor car accidents. And you will gush blood like crazy, but you will not bleed out.
Right. Well, and yeah, and yeah, if
it
the
won't do serious damage.
If the exactly. wound hadn't been separated, then maybe it'll clot and
exactly. Yeah.
The Reddit, as I'm fond of talking about, is now calling Will a being that is just scar tissue, driven by erotic vengeance.
Wow!
Wow!
Will has been taken apart and put back together a lot of times so far.
True. Very true. Erotic vengeance, just, though. Erotic vengeance.
I want to. That's my my new band name.
That's your new nickname, Erotic Vengeance?
No, a band name.
Your band
name.
Band name.
That's a derby name for you.
Erotic. Yeah, that is. So we get another one of those characters coming into focus, and this time it's Mason Verger, who gives us the wonderful final line of the episode, "Gentlemen, welcome to Muskrat Farms." I'd yes. forgotten that that was the name of his farm.
Muskrat.
Muskrat Farms.
Muskrat so, Farms. Then we went to credits, yeah. and I was like, oh my God!
Yeah, seriously?
Seriously?
We've got a lot to get to in one episode. That episode felt a lot like last season, the episode where Mason fed his face to the dogs. A major penultimate episode. And it feels like we're getting a season finale this week.
Yeah, very much so. But we have more coming.
But there's more.
There is more. There is more.
But there's more.
New storyline.
Yeah.
But they've got a lot to get to in this storyline in one more episode. I suppose there will be a lot of after effects of this entire season stretching forward. But, man, I'm excited that I'm beyond that point of knowing stuff that was happening. I'm very curious how they're going to continue to adapt Hannibal. I'm excited. And we only have a few days until it's on.
Yeah.
Can't wait.
Yay.
So you can email us at info@eattherudecast.com. You can follow us on Twitter @eattherudecast and on Tumblr, eattherudecast.tumblr.com. Miko, where can they find you online?
I am @Technogeisha on Twitter, Miko Technogeisha on Facebook. Basically, if you just, it's like Miko at Life on the Swing Set. I'm at Miko Technogeisha at yahoo.com. And you can find me on Life on the Swing Set and also at Technogeisha.com.
CCing all these email addresses. You're just going to send it to one and then just CC everything else just for fun. And then you can reply all. Ophelia, where are you
just
online?
Just for fun.
Just for fun.
I am at Ophelia Tesla on Twitter, and I am OpheliaTesla@gmail.com, and I'm Ophelia Tesla on Facebook. And it's OPHILIA, just to specify.
You can find me at CooperSBeckett.com and at CooperSBeckett on Twitter. That's it. That leads to everything else.
I just released
an audiobook.
All roads lead.
Yes, all roads lead to Cooper S. From CooperSBeckett.com. So thank you for listening, and thank you for joining us at the table.
Hey, this is Dan Savage from the Savage Lovecast and Savage Love, and you're listening to a Swing Set podcast at Swing Set FM.